asymptotic freedom. But today I'm coming back to the abelian gauge theory, but to discuss an important feature of gauge theories, abelian or non-abelian, which is the Higgs mechanism. So the famous Higgs mechanism, which is associated to the concept of symmetry breaking in physics. And so you have been, I think you have encountered and discussed, in fact, a large part of what I'm going to discuss here in the framework of relativistic quantum field theory in statistical mechanics and in condensed matter. So I will first present the concept of symmetry breaking and of it's called Goldstone bosons. Then I'm going to talk about what's happening when you have a Goldstone boson in a theory where you have charged particles. So it's the concept of charge condensates. On a very simple example, but that's something that I think you have seen in the present condensed matter course when discussing superconductivity, the Landau theory of superconductivity. And then I'm going to discuss the real Higgs mechanism in a relativistic quantum field theory. Okay. So of course, this Higgs mechanism is important. It's one of the very important ingredients of the standard model. But I'm going to discuss everything on the context of the abelian U1 symmetry. Because that's enough to understand the basic physical feature. And well, there are, of course, technical and important aspects related to non-abelian symmetries. But the basic mechanism is already there in an abelian symmetry. It doesn't depend whether the symmetry is abelian. It has to be continuous. So the simple example is the U1 theory. Okay, so let's first go back to discuss symmetry breaking. So I'm going to discuss the case where we have a scalar theory, a scalar field, but with two components. So it's a spin zero, but it has a U1 symmetry. So if you remember back, we have a scalar field, which I can call phi, which is phi 1. Well, here I'm going to put the indices as subscript and not as superscript. But so each field is real. It's a real field. So this is a complex. So you can rewrite this as a complex field, right? Equal phi 1 plus I phi 2, complex. And so if this the interaction, the theory with those two fields has a U1 symmetry, so that it respects the complex structure, then this is going to be, so you have two real fields, or one complex field, which is going to be a U1 multiplet. Okay. And of course, then you have phi bar equal phi 1 plus I phi 2. So you can equivalently express things in terms of phi 1 and phi 2, or of phi and phi bar, which is a complex conjugate of phi. Okay. So that's different from SU2 fields that we have been considering at the beginning of the week, where phi 1 and phi 2 are complex fields. Here it's real. Yes?
Can we put a minus I?
Okay. Yes, you are right. Thank you. If I make those typos already at the beginning of the lecture, I'm in bad shape. Okay, thank you. Okay, so now, in the same case than for the SU2 theory, in fact, you can write an action, which is in four dimensions, is going to be renormalizable with this U-on symmetry. So with the U-on symmetry, the action is simply, so let us write it in terms of, let's write in any dimension, 1/2 d mu phi d u phi plus, here I have a mass term, but let me write it as, so you can write this as phi phi and phi phi plus g with over 8, that's the convenient normalization, phi phi squared. So you have a mass term, but I prefer to have t rather than m squared and g. So g is positive, but t, for the moment, we left it unspecified, okay? So of course, you can also write this equivalently, so this is the action for the vector field, and in terms of the complex field, this is the same thing, but it's of course d mu phi, d mu phi bar, the conjugate of phi, plus t over 2, phi times phi bar, plus g over 8, phi times phi bar squared. Okay, so that's on that. So it's a theory of two bosons. You have two bosons, but since you have the U-on symmetry, you can view this theory of two bosons as a theory of charged bosons. You can, anticipating what we are doing when we speak of charged particles, you can see you have two bosons, but which are charged. We can write them B plus and B minus with some charge. B is four boson, okay? And so the antiparticles of B plus is B minus, and the antiparticles of B minus is B plus, because you have the charge conjugation. B bar plus is B minus, and so on. Okay. And now, so now, if T is positive, if T is M squared is positive, the bosons have a mass, M, basically. M is mass of the bosons. And these bosons interact like the neutral bosons of the scalar phi 4 theory. Okay. So it's just a simple extension. And of course, the classical minimum, the minimum of the potential, let's call this the potential V. Of phi, the quadratic plus quartic term, the minimum of V is at phi equals 0. But now that phi is a complex. So if I write here phi 1, phi 2, if vertical I take phi, I have just the standard potential of the phi 4 theory. So here it's a parabola, here it's the quartic, but it's just invariant by rotation. So this is a well, which is invariant by rotation. Okay, but now what's interesting is what's happening is T is negative, which is, you know, not forbidden by any principle in quantum theory, and which is an interesting case where you do quantum mechanics. Because in that case, so this is a T positive case, because in that case, if I draw the same picture, I'm trying not to mix things up. So this is phi 1, this is phi 2, this is V. Then you see the potential starts here with a negative curve. Negative curvature, and then it goes up at some point. Okay. But it's still invariant by rotation. So in fact, this is a well whose minimum is there, and the minimum is degenerate. You see, this is not deep. This is pink rather than red. Let's use red. Okay. Yes.
On the Lagrangian, shouldn't it be minus the potential?
Why?
On the action.
Oh, I'm using the Euclidean formulation. Euclidean. If you use the Minkowski, the real time, then you have a minus. But you have with minus this V. So what I'm going to discuss is basically the potential part. So that's for Euclidean. Yeah, thank you. Okay. So then, in fact, if it's the real-time action, it's a minus everything because the metric I've chosen is minus plus plus plus. Okay. So if t, so this is t positive, this is t negative, and you see that if t is negative, if you look for the minima of the action, you have you have several minima which are degenerate. They all have the same value for the potential, and they are given, it's a simple calculation, by, if you use the complex notation, phi equal phi naught ei theta, with theta some angle, theta belongs to 0 to pi, it's just the angle, it's notation, or if you prefer, phi equal phi zero cosine theta sine theta in a component notation, and with phi naught given by just this, well, let me call it phi minimum. Okay, that's here. The minimum of the action. And if you compute this phi naught, phi minimum is just square root of minus 2t divided by g. And remember, t is negative, so this is a positive number. Okay, so t negative. Okay. So what is the difference between the two cases? So if you think in terms of statistical mechanics, you have a U1 symmetry, but the U1 symmetry is spontaneously broken because you have a minimum of the potential, so it corresponds to the ground state of a quantum theory, which is not invariant under U1. So in T, for t positive, you have a vacuum, v, let's call it omega, which is a vacuum which is symmetric under the U1 symmetry. It means that if you, well, since you have a symmetry, you have current, you have charges, the integral of a current over a space-time. So you have a charge, and it's symmetric. It means that the Q of omega equals zero, where Q is the charge operator. Okay. If T is negative, you expect from this semi-classical picture that there are going to be several vacua. Let's call them omega of theta, which are physically different. They are different vacua because they correspond to different expectation value of the field. And in this vacua, they are not invariant, which means that Q of theta naught is different from zero. And they are such that if you consider, if you want here, for instance, the complex field operator phi, So I'm speaking in term of operator phi. You compute the expectation value of the phi operator between those vacua. And this is going to be, in a semi-classical picture, precisely phi minimum e I theta. So here one says that the U1 symmetry is spontaneously broken. It is spontaneously broken because the action is symmetric, so the Hamiltonian is symmetric, the dynamics is symmetric, nevertheless, the ground state of the theory is not symmetric. So the theory chooses by some reason which, in which vacuum it lives. Okay, so you have many different vacua. Yes?
I have two questions.
Yes?
One is, so by charge operator Q, you mean that e to the I phi Q is the group element that rotates by phi?
No, Q is defined as integral d x of g of x. It's a flux. No, of G0, I'm sorry. So you have currents. You have currents. The currents to the symmetry, as I've written in the notes, you have currents G mu equal I over 2 d phi, I'm sorry, phi times d mu phi bar minus phi bar times d mu phi. Those are the neutral currents. So you have a component associated to the to time, to G0. And you have, so you have G0, and you have the G's, the X component. Those are this is going to be the density, and this is how to be the current of charge. Yes?
What do you mean when you say the symmetry is spontaneously broken?
Okay, let me finish the answer, and then I answer. So Q is just the integral of a space. Of a space slice, so you choose, so it depends on t, of course, of the integral of the g0 component of the local density of charge on space. So this is the density of charge, and this is the total charge. And when you quantize, it becomes an operator. And you apply it to the vacuum, and you find zero on and zero. Okay, so let me go back by this.
I had a second question.
Yeah.
Which was, can we make more explicit the relationship between the vacuum, omega, and the configuration of minimum energy of the fields?
Well, I'm going to discuss that a bit, but that's. Well, in order to define what is a vacuum, you have to, in a language of, you know, of quantum theory, you have to do canonical quantization. So you start from the vacuum, you had creation and annihilation operator of the mode, and you beat out your phase. In the path integral or functional integral formalism, the vacuum is just defined by, if you know all the expectation value of observable, defined by the functional integral, then this gives you the concept of vacuum. So what I mean is that if you define this properly by functional integral, you get something non-zero. Okay. Okay, so now the question was, what do you mean by spontaneously broken? Well, clearly, the symmetry is broken because the vacuum state is not invariant. It's spontaneously broken because the action is invariant. So it's not a mechanism where you break the symmetry by enforcing some external field. It's not explicitly broken. It's spontaneously broken. It's broken spontaneously through the dynamics of the system. Okay, that's what this is what means spontaneous. And it's the same mechanism, that's the same mechanism which occurs in condensed matter in statistical mechanics when you consider a magnetic system. A magnetic system at low temperature has a spontaneous magnetization. It's spontaneous because even if you have zero vanishing external fields to orient the magnetization of the of your material, if it's pure enough, it will still have a spontaneous magnetization. Then in the Ising model, it can be up or down. And if you have no external field that has, you know, triggered the magnetization, the two solutions are equally possible. That's what means spontaneously. Broken means that the vacua is not invariant. Spontaneously means it's not invariant, but the Hamiltonian is still commutes with the charge. So this is in the operatorial formalism. This means that the charge commutes with the Hamiltonian. That's the definition of a symmetry. Yes?
No, then you mentioned the Ising model. In the Ising model, we can take like as a ground state in particular, any mixed state of those two ground states would also be a ground state, right?
Yeah, but a mixed state in quantum in statistical mechanics means that you have something like this. You have somewhere where your magnetization is plus, somewhere where your magnetization is minus, and you have a domain wall. So it's not a ground state of the system. It's a mixture. If the system is infinite, you see in half of the space it's plus, in half of the space it's minus. So if you are somewhere in the system, you are very far away from the domain wall, and so you may consider that the system is in one magnetization, and you don't know where it will be. So that's usually what in statistical mechanics is meant by a mixed state. Yes?
So how do we kind of like see that the vacuum states are different? Because like if the minimum is degenerate and like it's the same value.
Well, it's simply because this is a minimum.
Yeah.
You see? Here. This is another minimum. It will correspond. It's one classical minimum, and that's another classical minimum. So if you quantize, but you assume that quantum fluctuations are not too small, this will correspond to a quantum vacuum. This is going to be considered to another quantum vacuum. And clearly, they are different, but you go from one to another one by making a U1 rotation. And the U1 rotation is generated by the charge operator. So roughly speaking, if you apply EIQ to this, you change the value of theta. So this is a classical vacuum, and this is another one. Okay. This is in the case of a massive theory, you have one classical vacuum, which is just a minimum, so one doesn't have to take care what's happening. The U1 symmetry acts on the excited state, but it doesn't act as a vacuum. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to discuss that a bit more because, of course, then what you are interested in this case, when T is negative, what the spectrum of the theory looks like. Because you may consider the situation where the coupling constant is small, but T is small, so that the phi minimum is over the one. Yes?
I'm just wondering, so when this T is negative, so like when it's positive, we're saying it's the mass parameter squared, so what is it for T negative?
When T is positive or when T is negative?
Positive, you're saying that it's
when T is positive, that's roughly the mass of the particle if the weakling is small.
Yep.
If the coupling is small. If the coupling is large, the mass will be renormalized. But Yeah.
So then when it's negative order.
I'm going to explain. So what is a mass? What is the mass? And that's where things becomes interesting, because that's where the Goldstone boson appear. So if you do the calculation in perturbation theory using path integral, what you need to do is to compute the fluctuations around the classical vacua. But let's assume that the classical vacua is just in vector configuration. It's phi min. So let's assume that it's this. So the vacuum, the classical vacuum, is just oriented in this direction. Well, in this direction. This is phi 1. So I'm considering this vacuum. If I can consider another vacuum, but it's equivalent. You just make a rotation. So I choose the vacuum oriented in the first direction. Okay? And now I want to compute what's happening is phi. Is phi 0 plus some fluctuations, small fluctuations. Okay? Now I must expand, consider that the fluctuations are around this. So I'm going to consider that this is phi min plus a small fluctuation. And of course, this depends on x. So a fluctuation in the radial direction that I'm calling to call h, that's just, and in the other direction, the second direction, I'm going to call it phi. Okay, that's the notation. Sometimes it's called pi. Okay, so this is a radial excitation, and that's a transverse excitation. Here you consider that the field fluctuates in this direction, and here you with phi it fluctuates in this direction. Okay? And of course, this is a constant. So phi min, remember, is just square root of minus 2t divided by g. It's just a number. And now if you expand the potential v of phi, the potential v of phi was given by this number, but you expand it around the minimum here. You are going to find, well, the value at the minimum, this is minus t squared over 2g. That's not something important. And then you are going to find minus th squared plus, and no phi squared term. And then you are going to find some terms that I'm not going to write here, but they are going to be written in the notes. You find a term of as h cube plus a term like h phi squared plus a term which is h squared phi squared plus a term which is phi to the 4. And those bullets represent some coefficient which depend on g and t. Okay. And so this is the potential term. And now we express the kinetic term. When you express the kinetic term, of course, there is no derivative. So the action, the new action is, and let me write it here. So the very same. The very same action, which are there, S of phi. If I rewrite it in terms of the transverse and longitudinal mode, and the radial and transverse term, this is integral dx, 1/2 of d mu h d u h, plus, so let me write this, plus minus 2t h squared. Then there is a kinetic term for the transverse mode, which is d mu phi, d mu phi. Okay? But no phi squared. And plus the interaction terms. The interaction term has those terms. Okay. And so you see that the H term, H, is a real field. So it's a real field. Both H and sigma are real fields. So they describe bosons, neutral bosons. H describes a massive boson with mass mh equal minus 2t, and that's positive. Well, the mass squared, this is positive. And sigma and phi, I'm sorry, describe a massless boson. Massless because there is no phi squared term. So the mass of the boson is zero, you see. And well, this is easy to see on the picture of the potential, because you see, on the picture of the potential that I draw there, H describes excitation, radial excitation. You are on the bottom of the potential. So if you move radially, you go up. So it's just the curvature. This term is just the curvature of the potential on the bottom of the potential. And the curvature, there is a curvature in the radial direction. So here, this is a curvature of V in the radial direction. While there is no curvature in the transverse direction, because the potential is flat because of the symmetry. There is no curvature. The potential is flat. In the transverse directions. So it's easy to see why the excitation in the transverse direction are massless. That's because the potential is flat. So it's flat because it's there is spontaneous symmetry breaking. So symmetry breaking, spontaneous symmetry breaking. Oh, so spontaneous symmetry breaking is always written as SSB for spontaneously broken symmetry, or symmetry spontaneously broken. So spontaneous symmetry breaking implies that you have a massless boson in the spectrum of the theory. And this massless boson is called the Goldstone boson. Name is also associated to this is Nambu. So it's the Nambu Goldstone boson fact. Let me write it correctly. This is a Nambu Goldstone boson. Okay. And that's a theorem. In fact, there is a theorem which is due to Coleman, which says that in general quantum field theory, in the operator language, if you have spontaneously broken, it implies that there is a massless boson. It's also. The American physicist Sidney Coleman did important contribution. Okay. And you see that here you have one boson, massless, because there is one direction. If the symmetry was higher dimensional, for instance, if the symmetry was O3 instead of U1, you would have two massless bosons. Okay, here there is one massless boson because the pattern of symmetry breaking is U1 goes to identity, nothing. That's a pattern of symmetry breaking. Okay. But if you were O2 goes to 1, I'm sorry, O3, because of course, then you would have two bosons, two bosons. Because the space of a degenerate vacua would be the sphere. If you take vectors here, V with three components, you have phi. You take the same action, but you take phi equal phi 1, phi 2, phi 3. Because then the vacua are phi min times n with n. A vector belongs to S2, the three-dimensional sphere, the sphere, unit sphere in three dimensions. So the number of Goldstone bosons and depends on the pattern of symmetry. Oh no, I'm sorry. This is when you break O3 to O2, because if you have a spontaneous magnetization like this, but this is phi naught. This is a classical vacua, but you can still rotate around it. So if you break O3 by this pattern, there is still an O2 symmetry in the action, which is not spontaneously broken. Okay, yeah, so you see this pattern, O3 is broken, spontaneously broken into a residual non-broken symmetry group, which is a group of O2, which is a group of rotation around the direction of the background. Yes?
I just have a question for the potential there.
Yes?
Why is there a term that depends only on phi 4, the last term? Because...
Oh, that's because you just think, you know, you expand this. Expand this. So this is going to be, you see, in the potential you have phi min plus h squared plus a term in phi min, I'm sorry, you have phi min plus h squared squared plus phi squared, and then a term of phi min plus h squared plus phi squared squared. And you expand in h and phi. So you see that when you expand, there is going to be a phi square squared, so phi 4, and there is going to be an h 4. Oh, I didn't draw the h 4. Oh my God. Sorry. There is an h 4. Yes. This was your question? No.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I'm sorry.
But,
yes.
When we set h to zero, the potential should not depend on phi because it's.
Well, if you set h to zero, all those three terms disappear.
Yeah.
This term disappears. I'm sorry. When you set h to zero, yes. So only this term.
Yes.
Is there. So there is still an interaction between the Goldstone bosons. But so what? That's, yeah, it's not a problem. Okay. Okay, so now, okay. So this is a general theory of the fact that when you have a supersymmetric, spontaneous symmetry breaking, you have a Nambu Goldstone boson. So it's called the Coleman theorem. So that, yes?
What happens if we decide to expand around another value of the minima?
You mean h equal e phi, e I phi? Well, you just, it's going to be the same because then you can just decompose. It's better to be viewed in complex notation. If you have phi, I think so. Well, of, maybe not. Well, you see, this is an, basically, this is an angle. Phi is an angle. Time phi naught. So if you consider that phi zero is phi min times cosine theta 0, sine theta 0. You can write that phi, you can write phi to be equal to phi 0 times, if you prefer, yeah, phi 0 plus h, with h is parallel to phi 0, and plus phi, with phi orthogonal to phi 0. So if you write that phi 0 is phi min times some unit vector in the in on the two-dimensional space, you can write that h, if you want, that u is cosine theta 0 sine theta 0. You can write that h is u times h. And you can take that phi equal v times phi. That's a real field where phi is just the, I'm sorry, v. So here you have your sphere. Here I have u. And you take v to be the orthogonal vector. So v is going to be minus sine theta cosine theta 0. And since the potential is rotationally invariant, you write v and you get exactly the same action here. You just you parametrize in this direction for h and in this direction for phi. Okay. Well, let's end here. And now I'm going to discuss what's happening when you couple this field to the electromagnetic field. That's where the X mechanism occurs. So let's, good time to do the break. So let's meet in 5 minutes, and I'll have time to discuss the X mechanism. Yes?
The H can be like the magnification.
Why?
The H.
Yes?
Can be thought as magnetization.
Yeah, if you want. It's fluctuation of the magnetization in the direction of the magnetization. Exactly. Yes. This is also fluctuation of magnetization, but fluctuation is the transverse direction to the transverse magnetization. Yes, in fact, this is all this can be translated in the language of magnetic system and statistical mechanics. It's exactly the same thing, and that's, so that's something that you have seen in the, I think, in the condensed, in the statistical mechanical course. Okay, but I must. I'm not ahead of my schedule. I'll talk about charge condensate at the end of the lecture if I have time. And I will go directly to the X mechanism in the quantum field theory. But let me mention that this phenomenon, that you have a theory, you have a complex field that describes charged particle, and that the phi squared operator, you know, you see, takes a non-trivial value, because you see, for instance, that if you now consider phi squared in the vacuum of theta, of rather phi bar in the omega of theta in this vacuum. In fact, at x, this corresponds to the local density of bosons. It's in the canonical formalism for the scalar field, the Klein-Gordon field, you express phi, and well, it's neutral, and so that phi bar is equal to phi. Phi squared can be expressed in terms of A and A dagger creation and annihilation operator. And when you compute, apply this on the vacuum, you get some A dagger times A, the products of a cat and a minus k with the, and you discover that this is just, this corresponds to the number of particles in a mode k. So this is a density. This corresponds to the local density. So the and of course this is, if you compute this in a semi-classical approximation, this is not, this is just phi zero squared phi mean squared, which is minus 2t divided by g. So this is positive and different from zero, strictly positive. So this phenomenon of spontaneous symmetry breaking, in the case of this theory with the Yuon symmetry, that you have a condensation of bosons. And in fact, it's related to the simple phenomenon of Bose-Einstein condensation. The particles are bosons, so if their dynamics allow them to do, they can condense, form a condensate, which is a quantum state, which is a vacuum, which is very special because they, all the particles are share the same wave function. It's not just a collection of particles which have each their own momenta. It's a coherent quantum condensate of particles which are all in the same quantum state. Okay, and Bose Einstein condensate are a feature of very important feature of quantum field theory. In fact, and they appear in the theory of supraconductivity because a superconducting material is a condensed, can be viewed in the BCS theory as a condensate of Cooper pairs, which are bosons because they are pairs of electrons bound by the interaction between photons. So you have condensate when you have Cooper pairs in BCS theory of superconductivity. Of course, now, since about three decades, physicists in cold atom physics with lasers and cold atoms are able to construct Bose-Einstein condensate in some laboratories made out of some atoms. So the physics of Bose-Einstein condensate have developed a lot. Okay, so you should view this as a condensate of bosons. And those bosons are charged, yes?
Why does this like expectation value give you a condensate of bosons? Like why, from that result, why is it a condensate?
Well, trust me, in some sense, it's an exercise. If I start to discuss that, I won't have time to discuss the X mechanism. Okay. But it's just a generalization of something that you either have seen or should be able to recover as an exercise from QFT1 course, I hope. So we can discuss that later. But
okay.
Phi squared is basically the density of particles. In the same thing that you know, that it's in fact for the same reason than the reason of Born principle, that it's the square of the wave function which describes the probability to find a particle. So it's, if you, of course, here I'm cheating a bit, but basically it's Born principle. The field phi is a second quantized version of the wave function of a boson. Okay. Okay, so now let's discuss what's happening. Of course, we have a Yuon symmetry. We have charged particles, but here they do not interact. They don't have electromagnetic interaction. So what's happened when you couple coupling to the Yuon electromagnetic field? Okay. Well, so now I'm going to use the complex notation because that's simpler. So I'm going to use that the field phi is phi 1 plus I phi 2. Phi bar is phi 1 minus I phi 2. And if you want to couple it to the electromagnetic field, I'm going to have, so that's the boson. And I'm going to have an gauge potential, which is the Maxwell field. In that case, so forget about what I did last days about this group indices. I just have one A mu, which is a real field. So this is complex. Real. This is a vector potential of electromagnetism. And so this is, if you want, a scalar. That scalar, I'm going to build scalar electrodynamics. Electrodynamics where the, instead of the electrons which are spin one particles, I have bosons which are spin zero particles but charge. Okay? Charge. Then we know what it, we have to do. We want to have we want to have gauge symmetry, local gauge symmetry. Okay? So what is local gauge transformation? The local transformation is to change phi of x into phi of x ei alpha of x. And here, let me introduce the electromagnetic charge E. So I'm using the notation where you have rescale A mu by E. So that's the standard. So E is a charge. E is a charge. So the boson is complex. So it's a charge. And it has a charge which is equal to E. So the boson has charge E. The antibosons in some particle has charge minus E. Okay, so you have E, and alpha is an arbitrary phase transformation. It's a function, real function. And of course, A mu of x transforms as A mu of x plus d mu alpha of x. That's the gauge transformation of Maxwell's theory. No commutator and group structure because we have U1, which is an abelian. Okay. And well, the action is obtained by replacing d mu by d mu covariant derivative, where d mu is d mu minus I e a mu. Those are the covariant derivative. And of course, well, you can define d mu bar because it's complex. It's d mu plus I e a mu. We need going to do to need the complex conjugate of covariant derivative because d mu acts on phi and receive construct an action for scalar 2ED, which is just the action of electromagnetism plus the action of the scalar field while we replace the ordinary derivative by covariant derivative. We are sure that it's working. So the action is S is integral dx. We are in any dimension. 1/2 of d mu phi and d mu phi bar, this is invariant, plus t over 2 phi phi bar, plus g over 8 phi phi bar squared. So I just replaced ordinary derivative by covariant derivative. And then I have to this, to add to this, plus minus 1/4 f mu nu, with of course f mu nu equal d mu a nu minus d mu a mu. Okay. And so you get the standard rules of the standard theory of a charge boson coupled to electromagnetism. So if you want to think about what are the Feynman rules, these are, for instance, well, let me write them here. The Feynman rules are going to be that you have a boson, a photon, you have a boson, but the boson is charged, so it carries a current. So it carries, you draw this by an arrow, like for the electron. And you have a coupling. Here. But you have also, so this comes from the derivative, but you have also, since you have d mu squared, you have also a coupling that occurs like that. So the interaction is different because the boson is spinless instead of in spin one, instead of being spin 1/2. And in addition, you have the rules of your, you have the standard 5-4 interaction. Of the boson. And this arrow represents current in charge, so the interaction has to preserve the charge. You cannot have three charged bosons becoming one charged boson. Charge in, charge out. Okay, so these are the Feynman rules of the. And of course, this is of order E. This is of order E squared, and this is of order G. And the mass, okay. So these are the Feynman rules. Okay. Of course, these are the Feynman rules when the boson has a positive mass. And now the question is, what happens in the T negative phase? So this phase, if T is positive, is called the Coulomb phase. So T positive is called the Coulomb phase, because simply you have particles obeying the Coulomb law of electromagnetism, Coulomb. And what is this phase? And here you see that you run into a problem, because a minimum of the action, as we have seen, is phi of x equals phi minimum times some phase, ei alpha, and ei theta. Okay. Well, I can write this as ei theta. I just multiply the phase by E, because this is a phase associated to a charge. Okay. So here theta goes from 0 to 2 pi divided by the charge. Okay, it's not. But now the theory is scale invariant. It's a gauge invariant. So gauge invariance means that if phi of x is a solution of this, I make a gauge transformation. This is also a solution of the action. Okay? So taking phi of x equal phi min times ei phi of x, and of course, a mu of x being the corresponding gauge transformation, this is just a gauge transformation. Gauge transform action of phi x equal phi min and a mu equals 0, which is obviously a solution, a minimum of this action, because it's a minimum where this is 0, the d mu are replaced by ordinary derivative, and phi here is constant with 0, and then for phi equal phi min, this is a minimum. So this is a minimum of the action. So those correspond to classical ground state of the theory. But they are all related by, they are all gauge equivalent. So they should correspond to the same physical state. You see? So we are in a situation very different from there. Here we have spontaneous symmetry breaking because the symmetry is global. Here the symmetry is local. It's a gauge symmetry. It corresponds to redundancy in the description of the physical degrees of freedom of the theory. So all the minima of the action are good gauge equivalents, so there are only there is only one physical vacuum possible. And so no spontaneous symmetry breaking is expected to occur. So although we start from a theory where the potential from the gauge field for the matter field, if you want, allows for a potential to form a condensate. So even if there is a potential, well, there is a formation of a condensate. When this condensate is coupled to electromagnetic field, there should not be any super spontaneous symmetry breaking. So no Goldstone boson. No massless particle. Yes?
There's two symmetries here.
Wait. What? No, there's only U1.
So there's still a global part of the U1 which could be broken, right?
No, because there is no global U1 anymore. U1 has been transformed into a full-fledged local symmetry. You cannot break it. You have more complicated system like this one, where you can break part of the, you can make some of the, you can have a gauge symmetry and part of it is spontaneously broken. But that's more complicated. Yes?
Sorry, could you please explain the action to this?
Well, that's the same idea. You know, I look for a minimum of this action.
Right.
And I've seen that a minimum of this action is obtained where A mu equals zero,
right,
and phi is the minima of the action without electromagnetic field. Okay. And in any case, if you introduce a magnetic an electromagnetic field, this is going to be positive. So they can only increase the action. So that's the only, that's a minimum of the total action.
Yes.
Because this is zero, otherwise this is positive, and this is minimum. So any change of that will make this positive, will make this positive, and will increase this.
Okay.
So this is really, one minimum of the action. The problem is that all the other ones are equivalent by gauge transformation. While here you have no local gauge transformation, so you cannot transform it. Yes?
We can always take A mu to zero by gauge transformation, but then the phi x equals to phi minimum, the phi minimum also have a phase. Isn't phase a global phase?
No, because you see, if you change phi min by a global phase,
yes.
It's still a gauge transformation. You do not. It's a particular case of gauge transformation. Global gauge transformation are a particular case of local gauge transformation.
Yes.
So they are correspond to physically equivalent configuration. You have no global symmetry anymore.
But why is that? Because we can always take A mu to zero by gauge transformation. Then the phi minimum will have a phase. Global.
Yeah. No, but the global phase is one particular case of a local gauge transformation. Changing theta of x of theta of x plus some theta zero.
Mm-hmm.
Is a local gauge transformation. It's just one particular case of a local gauge transformation where you do not change a mu, but still, you and you know very well that you know you have those quantum phenomena associated to the fact that you have some global phase. For instance, I think maybe I'm wrong that the celebrated Bohm-Aronoff effect is kind of things. You have phases which are locally. You don't see locally that there is, has been a gauge transformation, but then so you see. You have to be very careful. There is no global symmetry which remains when you couple it to the electromagnetic field. U1 became a local. Okay. Okay, so this means that the spectrum of the theory is going to be different because there will not be a gauge, a Goldstone boson. But now, if you think about the spectrum of the theory, and I'm going to see the beautiful solution given by the physicist who discovered the Higgs mechanism, you have to think about what is the content of the theory. If the theory is in the Coulomb phase, you have matter field, so the phi field describes charged particle and antiparticles. So you have 1 plus 1 degrees of freedom. Particles, antiparticles. Yes?
Sorry. I thought that we form a condensate only when we have this like degenerate minimum.
No, I'm going to show that you have a condensate, but a condensate with electromagnetic field inside behaves in a very different way. Okay. There is still a condensate because phi phi squared, which I wrote here, phi bar phi, is a gauge invariant. So it's a physical quantity. Remember? There is a condensate because phi by phi is gauge invariant. So the concept of density of bosons makes sense. It's non-zero in the vacuum. But there cannot be a Goldstone boson. So let's go back to there. In the Coulomb phase, you have 1 plus 1 for matter, let's say, matter phi, plus 1 plus 2 degrees. So you have 2 degrees of freedom, let's say, for matter, because you have particles and antiparticles. And you have 2 degrees of freedom for the gauge field, for an electron, because you have 2 polarization for the fondons. And here you have B and B bar. You have bosons, scalar bosons, and antiparticles, which is the opposite, B plus and B minus. Okay. So now the question is in this phase, what is it? There will be degrees of freedom, but there cannot be a Goldstone boson. Well. In fact, the calculation is quite simple to perform. You still can fix the gauge. So now, when you assume that you write phi of x equal phi minimum plus h of x with h. So remember, this is a complex. This is real. This is real. So when you assume that the phi can be written as a real field, phi min plus some fluctuations, this is a choice of gauge. So choosing phi real is a gauge fixing condition. Because for any phi, any configuration of the field, any phi, from any phi of the form a phi real of x ei alpha of x, You can find a gauge transformation, which is obviously by taking that, which goes to phi real of x. So it's a gauge fixing condition. So you see that usually in gauge theories, one enforce gauge fixing condition on the gauge potential. But now you have two fields. You have phi and you have mu. And gauge transformation acts both on mu and phi. So you can equivalently fix a gauge on phi. So our gauge fixing condition, the gauge fixing condition that was devised by the discoverer of the Higgs mechanism, is to find, consider phi real. But when phi is real, so I choose this, of course I have no gauge fixing condition. On mu. Mu is free. I would enforcing something non-physical constraint. So you see here, if I do this, phi real has 1 degree of freedom, and mu has 3 degrees of freedom because there are no gauge constraint on mu. That's just stupid counting. But now, what is the spectrum of the theory? Well, in the spectrum of the theory, of course, you start from the action. But now what you write is d mu of phi is, if I write that phi is phi min plus phi h, d mu of phi is the same thing as the ordinary derivative of this, which is d mu of h minus I e phi min a mu minus I e a mu h. You see? So this is the naive covariant derivative of H. And this is a new term. Because phi min is square root of 2t divided by g minus is different from zero. So the covariant derivative of H is not the naive covariant derivative of a scalar field, because we have shifted it. Okay? So you replace this. So you do this. Of course, you have d bar mu of phi, which is going to be the same with a minus I here. You rewrite this in terms of this. And what do you get as an action? The action you get is going to be something similar to this, but now where you replace d mu by covariant derivative of d mu of h. So what you get is the action is integral of over dx. So you get 1/2 of d mu a nu d mu a nu minus d mu, minus d mu a nu d nu a mu. This is the term of electromagnetism. But since in d mu of phi, you have a term phi min times a mu, the term d mu of phi, d bar mu of phi bar, gives you a mu squared phi. So you get a new term, a mu, e squared phi min squared over 2, a mu. So that's ordinary Maxwell. This is new. And that's the important term. And then we get this term we stated for H. So we get 1/2 of d mu H d mu H plus g phi min squared over 2 H squared. It's the same thing, that's the term that I wrote before, plus a term of order h cube with some coefficients that I'm not giving, plus a term of order h4 plus a constant. So those are the terms. Those are this term, this term, and this term. Okay? So these terms, those are the terms of the pure H term of the theory without electromagnetic field. And in addition, since you have some A mu and some D mu of H, you are going to have terms which are coupling between H and that. So you have E squared phi min A mu H plus E squared over 2 a mu, H squared. Okay. So these are the ordinary term of electromagnetism, of scalar theory. These are the terms for electromagnetism. But now you have, where did I put my, you have this term, A mu, A mu. And these are terms which describe the interactions between A and H. And so there is no phi. So H has 1 degree of freedom, and A mu has 3 degrees of freedom. Why does it have 3 degrees of freedom? That's because this term is a mass term for the electromagnetism, for the photon. So now in this phase, I have 5 minutes left. That's enough. In this phase, the electromagnetic field A mu has a mass. And the mass, the mass of A is just E times phi minus. So it's E times square root of minus 2t divided by g. And it's positive. So the electromagnetism, the electromagnetic field or the gauge boson got a mass. So the excitation of the electromagnetic of the gauge field are not massless photons propagating with the speed of light with 2 polarization. They are massive particles, so you have massive gauge boson with 3 polarization. And if a gauge boson is massive, it can have 3 polarization. Because if you think about a photon, if you have a photon, a gamma, it's a particle that moves at the speed of light. So the electromagnetic, the electric field can oscillate only in two polarization. Now, if you have this massive gauge boson, let's call it, I don't know, well, it's called W. Why is it written? I don't know how I write it in my notes. Okay, this massive gauge boson, well, let's call it W, massive. Okay, so you have a particles. It propagates. It cannot propagate at the speed of light. So you can find a reference frame where it's at rest. It's at rest. So it's at rest, and when it's at rest, it corresponds to an electromagnetic wave which can oscillate in the three direction of space. Okay. Separation because the propagation of the boson is less than C. Okay. So, and you see that this massive gauge boson interacts with the H field. So, A mu is a massive gauge boson. If the massive gauge boson, so we can call it W. And H is a massive scalar particle. It's carry no spin. And this is the famous X particle. So you see that when you have condensate formation, what you get is a massive gauge boson with three polarization and a massive scalar with one degree of freedom because it's neutral. Okay? It's real. It's neutral, okay? And of course, so the mass of the Higgs, particle is given by this term. So it's G times phi minus. Okay, so it's positive, phi minus squared. No, it's square root of G times phi minus. So it doesn't depend on E. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And the mass of the Higgs bosons, I wrote it here. Yeah, I wrote it here. The mass of the W is, let me write it again because it's important, E times phi minus. Okay. And so let me, well, take 2 minutes to mention that. A bit of history. First, there is a classical analog of that. Non-relativistic. Of this mechanism, which is known since the 30s. 37 maybe. Which occurs in the physics of plasma. Because you may ask, what is a condensate of charged particle in ordinary classical physics? It's a plasma. When you have a background of fixed ions, and you have electrons, but the plasma is a gas which is heated, so the electrons are liberated. So you have E minus, which are free to propagate in the plasma. Okay. So it's globally neutral. But you have electrons which are not bound to the atoms, at least some of the electrons are not bound to the atom. So they are free to move. And they can respond when you have an if you send an electromagnetic waves with electric and magnetic fields, the electrons will respond to the electromagnetic waves because they are free. It's a plasma. And in fact, it was discovered, I think, by a famous physicist Langmuir, that if you have a plasma with a density n of electrons, and therefore of ions, then this medium can sustain a plasma with this medium can sustain, I hope you see that, it can sustain plasma oscillations. So there is an instability, and plasma oscillations occurs with a frequency omega plasma, let me write it, omega plasma squared equals 4 pi over m in a unit where on some CGS unit, n0 times e squared. Okay? It's a fundamental formula. So, and in fact, it corresponds to, in the plasma, you have an electric field, you have an E here, which is global, and so you have an E, which is some easy, so E of T and X, which is E zero times cosine omega T, plasma, or where omega is omega plasma. So you can have an electric field that oscillates. So it oscillates, so it accelerates the electron. But move electrons, you know, creates a current, which creates a magnetic field, which varies with time, because the electric field varies, so there is a magnetic field which varies. So there is an extreme magnetic, and it's known that a magnetic field that is varying with time create an induction electric field. And so the system responds and oscillates spontaneously. Okay? But what does it mean? It means that in a plasma, you may have an electric field which is stationary with a frequency. So it means that you have electromagnetic waves which do not propagate at the speed of light, but have some frequency. So some energy. And you see that this n e squared is just this. Because omega is like an energy. And it's omega, so this formula means that this omega is proportional to square root of n0 e squared. But remember, a density of electrons is like phi min squared in the language of condensate, the density of the condensate. So this formula is in fact this formula. So one can see that the massive gauge boson is a relativistic version of plasma waves in a non-relativistic plasma. And so let me just mention to finish that in fact this analogy which is, so there is an analogy which is plasma, plasma waves, then in the language of supraconductivity or super, well, supraconductivity, there is the same phenomenon, and I think that you have seen in the condensed matter course that the condensate of Cooper's pairs is described as the same kind of theory. And therefore, and what's happening in high energy physics. And so, well, this kind of idea, many physicists have contributed to it, not only Higgs, not only Nambu and Goldstone, but one should mention also the name of the famous condensed matter physicist, which is P.W. Anderson, which was, I think, the first to suggest that this idea could be applied to energy physics. And then, of course, to Engler and there's a T and Boot, which were physicists from Belgium. Some American physicists whose name were, well, I have the name here. It's Hagen. Well, Hagen was German, I think, Guralnik and Kribel. And of course, Peter Higgs. And so, well, depending on which side of Atlantic, for instance, you stay, in Europe, continental Europe, and England, this is rather called the Engler-Brout Higgs mechanism. That's Kibble. In the US, this is often named the Anderson Higgs mechanism. When I was a graduate student, this was called the Kibble, the Higgs-Kibble mechanism. Don't be asked, so, but if you want to be respect the memory of all these gentlemen, well, most of them are still alive. These are the important names to be remembered and then forgotten with those persons. Okay. So, of course, the Higgs mechanism, you are going to, it's a very important ingredient in high energy physics in the standard model, because in the standard model, then the gauge field is SU2 cross U1. Only part of it is spontaneously broken, so you have an SU2 cross U1, which is spontaneously broken into a U1 electromagnet, so you have a remnant of symmetry which is not broken, starting. Here you have SU2 as three gauge field, so 3 plus 3 times 2 polarization plus U1. And if you have a vector field phi, it has plus 2. Okay, but if you couple it to a X field, the X fields as remember 3 times 2. So that's the same idea, and it's broken into, if I made no mistake in the calculation, what you get is Well, I should stop there because I'm going to be, let's say that in this case you have this, it's coupled, so you have a gauge field, you have a charged boson fields, which makes a condensate, and we end up with 3 W bosons, which are the W plus, W minus, and the Z0. 3 because it's the SU2 gauge which is broken and not the U1, so it has 3 generators. You have one Higgs boson, and you have still the photon, U1 boson. So you have 2 polarization for the U1 boson, 3 times 3 polarization for the massive gauge boson, 1 degrees of freedom for the Higgs boson, which is massless. So this makes 12, if I'm not mistaken. And you can check that this is exactly the number of degrees of freedom of the theory one started from, where you have 4 times 2 plus, I'm going to make a mistake. Okay, anyway, this is how it works. Sorry. I've been too long. Anyway, in the advanced high energy course and QFT, you are going to see that in full detail. Okay, thank you.